and welcome to Enlightened Empaths, your community for the spiritually awakened, where we discuss, explore, and connect with fellow empaths, healers, intuitives, and seekers. Hello, empaths. We hope you're having a wonderful week. Denise, how are you doing so far?
I'm okay, thank you. This spring weather is starting to be right on the periphery, so that's exciting.
Oh, it's so exciting. And we've got a big eclipse coming up and lots of exciting things. And so I've just been kind of noticing some new little buzzwords going on in my newsfeed that I thought it'd be fun to kind of chat about.
I agree.
Okay, so the first one I came across was called post-traumatic growth. Have you ever heard of this?
I haven't.
Okay, so we've all heard of PTSD, right? Which is, you know, something traumatic that happens to our brain processing after we go through a challenging event. But post-traumatic growth is a positive psychological change that's often experienced after this challenging or traumatic time. And I saw that and I really liked that. I liked that we can take a difficult time and kind of flip it a little bit and see some really good, wonderful healing that can come out of it. Now, we're not using this to diminish PTSD. It can and often does coexist with PTSD. It's kind of a method of assisting the healing process by looking at the strength and lessons acquired through the challenging time.
And I think that that's what flashes in my mind with that is the Phoenix Rising or the Tower card in the Tarot. That often we'll use the Tower card. It's, you know, letting go of towering defenses, it's disruption, it's change, but it also is about a spiritual awakening. And often when we hit that place of such trauma, when we get on the other side of it, it's like, okay, I needed to go through that in order to grow and evolve and move forward from it. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yes, exactly. And I love the comparison of those Tarot cards because what's the Tarot card that comes after the Tower?
Star, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is about
calm after the storm and.
Yeah. And finding your light and really reclaiming who you are. So psychologists Richard Tedeschi and Lawrence Calhoun, they did a lot of research into this idea of post-traumatic growth. And they identified five areas of growth that occur over time. So this isn't like, ta-da, right away. But over time, after you've gone through a difficult period, they say that survivors of trauma recognize and embrace new opportunities. They forge stronger relationships with loved ones, as well as with victims who suffered in the same way. They cultivate inner strength through the knowledge that they have overcome this tremendous hardship. They gain a deeper appreciation for life. And their relationship to religion and spirituality changes and evolves. So those are some really positive things.
They really are. And it's, yeah, I've shared this with you before, that one of my favorite expressions is I've been to hell and this isn't it. Because if you've gone through stuff in your life that was rough, it was dark, it was heavy, when you get on the other side of it, you have a new benchmark to say, this might be bad, but it sure as hell isn't that bad.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm not wishing ill will or trauma or anything on anyone, but I think that it does give you a deeper appreciation and an understanding of I'm strong enough to get through this.
Exactly. Yeah, the research has shown that if you survive a battle with cancer, for example, it might lead you to quit your job or devote your life to fighting against cancer. People might experience a new appreciation for life or a recommitment to their values and a connection, a deeper, stronger connection to their loved ones. And so I think this idea of looking at a challenging time you've been through, rather than nursing it like a cold sore so, you know, it can't heal, instead of that, maybe, or in tandem with that, also think about the changes that challenging time forced upon you and how that actually was a very, very helpful. You might not be where you are today had you not gone through that difficult time.
And don't you find that it gives you more empathy and compassion for where other people are in their lives as well? That when you go through those kind of changes or trials and tribulations, that it opens up that mindset of there, but for the grace of God, go I.
Yeah, exactly.
If our goal is to come together in unity and to have more respect for each other, then compassion is a huge part of that. And sometimes it does take dark stuff in order to reach that compassionate place.
Exactly. And it's often in the darkness that we do the most growth. We're like seeds, you know, and when we're in that damp, dark time of our life, that's often when we grow the most.
Don't you find that with grief, so if you've lost someone dear, or you, as you mentioned recently, you've lost both of your parents in a very, very short period of time, that it gives you a different appreciation for making the most of still being here, of take the risk, take the trip, do the job. It's about being alive, and it's not about getting stuck in that situation of just marking time.
Exactly. And really appreciating every moment.
Yes.
I think that's really, really important. You know, another buzzword you and I have talked about that's going on right now is glimmers. We did a whole show on it. And I love that idea too, especially if you are going through a PTSD type of growth period, focusing on those glimmers, I think can be incredibly helpful. Our dear friend, Asia Suler, who we've had on the show a couple of times, she recently posted about being in a threshold moment. That's a new phrase to me, a threshold moment. Is that new to you too?
Yes. Yes. I love that. That was a beautiful article that she wrote as well.
It really was. And she talks about how it's a potent, exciting, enlivening, and sometimes very uncomfortable time when you just know, you can feel it in your bones that your life is about to change. And it's during these times that everything you knew to be true might be dissolving, but you know, you haven't quite stepped into the new chapter. You can just feel it. And she says these are like signposts in your life marking a distinct before and after. But in these threshold moments, you have to just be comfortable with the unknowing and just simply stand there feeling the change that's about to come. And I really, really love that idea of being in a threshold moment. And I think especially as intuitives and empaths, that can be hard for me when I'm in a threshold moment because I always want to know. But I love the idea of just standing in that threshold moment and thinking, oh, this is so exciting. Something beautiful is shifting and coming. And I'm going to trust. I'm going to trust myself, and I'm going to trust the universe that this is all unfolding as it should.
And it allows it to be so much more than we may anticipate it to be. We may think, oh, this is it. This is the epitome of what I want it to be. And then the universe brings even more.
Exactly, which is why I think we have to be always cognizant of purposely manifesting, but also surrendering to that idea of more.
Yes.
Which leads me perfectly to my next buzzword that I am super fascinated by, and it's called mental time travel.
Oh.
Yeah, isn't that a great phrase? Mental time travel. It's the ability to reflect on the past and project ourselves into the future with our thoughts. It's called, It's a part of our autonoetic consciousness, this sense we have of ourselves as persisting across time. So we can use mental time travel to re-experience the past and pre-experience the future. What do you think about that?
I think that it goes along with that time-space continuum, that it's all happening simultaneously, which we've both been kind of obsessed with for a while. I think that it is, and this, the weird part of this, though, is when you get something stuck in your head and you keep replaying it over and over again, is that more of an anxiety response than a mental time travel? So you're saying going back and experiencing it again, is that to feel the emotions of it, to feel the depth, the joy of it? Or I guess I'm a little confused.
Both.
Okay.
And so I think that it can be negative if you're constantly, you know, again, too much of anything is not a good thing, right?
I agree.
But the research is showing that we are the only mammals who do this, that have the ability to do this, and that when we revisit past events, like in a nostalgic sense, it can be very helpful and comforting. I think one of the words I was researching even called it nesting, where we kind of nest our thoughts into a cozy, happy past moment. You can also use it to kind of relive the event in your head and experience it from a safe place. So if you have a difficult event, you can go over it in your mind, knowing that you are safe now. But yes, of course, if you do it too much, it's not a good thing. Dr. Annalisa Cohen, she says that while practicing present moment awareness is important, we should also highlight the benefits of being a mental time traveler. She told Discover Magazine in September, "Our ability to disengage from the present and immerse ourselves in imaginary worlds is one of our most extraordinary gifts as humans and underlies some of our greatest accomplishments." And she says it also helps our mind to become more flexible because now the imagination is involved. Psychological barriers are lowered, and suddenly ideas, concepts, and possibilities that we might not have considered have a better chance of coming to mind. There is a fluidity to our thinking.
So that applies beautifully also to manifesting, to, you know, setting a new goal and intention and visualizing how it's going to come into play. It seems like those correlate really strongly.
Yeah, they totally do. Listen to this. I have a little excerpt from a book I want to play around with you. I want to see what you think. It's called Imaginable: How to See the Future Coming and Feel Ready for Anything, Even Things That Seem Impossible. And it's by Jane McGonigal. She's a game designer and a futurist. She calls this mental time travel futures thinking when you focus it, like you just said, on manifesting. She says futures thinking isn't a superpower and you don't have to fix everything or save everyone, but it is an incredibly useful practical tool to prepare your mind to adapt faster to new challenges, to build hope and resilience, reduce anxiety and depression, and inspire you to take actions today that set yourself up for future happiness and success. So she has this exercise in her book. She says, for the next 30 seconds, I want you to imagine yourself waking up tomorrow morning. Try to picture it in your mind or describe it to yourself as clearly as possible. What room or space are you in? What wakes you up? An alarm? The sunlight? Someone nudging you or calling you? Is it light out or still dark? Is there anyone with you? What are you wearing? What kind of mood are you in? It's the very first thing you do now that you're awake in this imagined future tomorrow. Does that make sense?
Oh, it does make sense.
Okay. And she says, it was likely very easy for you to envision this with lots of details. Now let's try something more challenging. For the next 30 seconds, I want you to imagine yourself waking up 1 year from today. Again, try to envision this as clearly as possible. Feel free to change as many or as few details as you want from the first scene you imagined. Are you somewhere different? Are you physically changed? What's your mood? Do you have a different morning habit a year from today? What might that new habit be? Is there someone with you? Are you alone? What are you focusing on that morning? Now, she says, try one more act of imagination. This time, she says, I want you to imagine yourself waking up 10 years from today. And she says, take as long as you need to come up with a vivid and plausible image of yourself, of the space that you're in, who might be with you, where are you, what's around you, what do you see, hear, smell, and feel? What's the first thing on your mind when you wake up 10 years from today? What do you have planned for that day? How are you physically different, emotionally different? That's a very different exercise, isn't it?
Well, it is. And then you get into the whole where constantly being bombarded with be in the moment, be in the moment. Don't look too far ahead. So then to visualize all of this moving forward of where you would be. And you're right. Isn't this exactly when people are doing a huge physical change? Like they want to lose a lot of weight or they want to get in shape. And they say, start visualizing what it would feel like. Start to, you know, fake it till you make it kind of a thing. So I think this is that even more intensified of
yeah.
What would your life really look like if, and not in the, what I like is the way that you worded this. It's not in the sense of negating that your life where it is right now isn't good. It's like, how can I open up to it being more?
Exactly. And she says, try not to make this future scene a total fantasy. Stay grounded in what you feel is genuinely realistic and possible for you. And she also says, if you have a hard time visualizing this, because we have a lot of listeners who, I think it's called aphantasia, who have a hard time right. visualizing, she says you can simply write it down. It's just as effective. But you will find that 10 years in the future is a trickier challenge compared with 1 year. That's because you've never been 10 years older than you are now, so your brain doesn't know what to expect. Plus, there's so much opportunity for things to change in a decade. Your body, your relationships, your life circumstances, your physical environment. And we know that our brain intuitively grasps this unknowability. So instead of confidently projecting one possibility, your brain is going to open up a blank space for you to consider multiple possibilities. So you have to start making intentional choices about what you want to imagine in your future. You have to fill in the blanks, and this takes a lot of effort. But McGonagall says this is why this kind of imagination is so powerful. Because instead of simply remembering what it knows, your brain has to invent a new possibility. And yeah, it's going to draw on past experiences and current hopes and fears and your intuition about what might possibly change in 2 years. But she says, after you've made this new memory, something amazing happens. What was previously unimaginable to your brain is now imaginable. And you can revisit this new memory whenever you want and examine how it makes you feel. Does it spark positive or negative emotions? These pre-feelings help you decide. Should you change what you're doing today to make this future more or less likely? And because you invented this memory, you can change it whenever you want. I like that idea of kind of training our brain.
Well, and what I'm thinking about too is, with just think about the difference between 22 and 32, or 32 and 42, or 42 and 52. Those are huge, huge life changes. You're in a different mindset. It's exactly what you said a minute ago. Physically, mentally, spiritually, you grow and evolve, and you can't fully understand what it's going to be like to be that age. But then don't you find that you reach a certain point where you have to make a conscious choice with, I'm not going to let the chronological numbers define how I'm choosing to live my life. And maybe by pre-teaching yourself or pre-conceiving what it might be like 10 years in the future, you're being proactive with not falling into a state of, oh, it's only going to be this because that's what this age is all about.
Oh, that's so true. Yeah. Yeah. She says that scientists call this form of imagination episodic future thinking. I like that phrase too.
I like it too. It's got a nice ring to it.
She says it's a kind of mental time travel because your brain is working to help you see and feel the future. And she says it's not an escape from reality. It's a way of playing with reality to discover risks and opportunities you might not have considered. So EFT, this episodic future thinking, is not a daydream in which you fantasize about waking up in a world where your problems are magically solved. No, she says it's a way of connecting who you are today with what you might really feel and do and be in the future. And here's something cool. She says that when we do this EFT thinking, it increases connectivity between 11 distinct brain regions. When we simply remember a past event, this activates only 6 of the 11 regions of the brain. So when we are mentally time traveling into the future, we're actually working our brain and making more regions of the brain turn on.
Okay, so another twist to this, as intuitives, when we get a precognitive hit, are we on some level using EFT?
Yes, I think we are. I think we are. And they've done studies. George Anderson had his whole brain hooked up, and they were able to show that several areas of his brain were lit up that are only lit up when we're in REM sleep, for example. So I do think when we're doing intuitive stuff, we are tapping into the collective unconscious, but also kind of this future time travel.
Right.
Now, she says
Very
that
fascinating.
It really is. She says that when we are doing this episodic future thinking, our brain goes on a hunt for realistic details and plausible ideas. And so doing this activates the hippocampus, the seat of memory and learning, and it digs through your memories, plus any other facts and ideas you've stored away. So depending on what kind of future you're imagining, the hippocampus identifies the most relevant stuff and retrieves and combines it into a new scene. So whatever you see in your future will always come from information your brain has already perceived and processed. This is why I think it's so important to feed your brain with positive news as much as possible and positive reading material and positive viewing material. Again, I'm not saying don't ever watch another Dateline, because y'all know I love my Datelines, but I am saying balance it with as much positive stuff as you can, because you literally are priming your subconscious for helping you to co-create your reality. She says that as you get better at imagining the unimaginable, you will incorporate not just obvious ideas and events, but also surprising things that could be really important in your future. And she says your brain starts to do what cognitive scientists call opportunity detection. And here's where you will start to look for ways to fulfill your needs and achieve your goals to make that future scene a reality.
So the one thing that keeps coming to mind is for people who are in situations where they're trying to look ahead into the future, but they're putting it on, well, if this person in my life would, you know, stop drinking or treat me better, or my job is this or that, it seems like there has to be some level of self-accountability in all of this as well. That you have to be really realistic in that you're not looking to change someone else's. This seems like it would have to be really focused on you and what you're doing.
Yes, I agree. Because you never want to subconsciously manipulate the actions of another person. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But I think this is really important to try, because so many times, how many times, Denise, have you heard clients who said, well, I just took that job, but I never really thought what it would mean to move across the country. I just never really took time to think about what it would mean to live in a different time zone from all my friends and family. And I wish I'd thought about that before. Like, don't you hear stuff like that all the time?
Very much so. Yes. Or thinking that, well, if this happens, if I do a geographical, or if I lose the weight, or if I, you know, get the better job or have more money in the bank, that it's going to somehow make it all better. And if this sounds like a way that you can really play around with, well, what would that look like if I wasn't struggling financially? Or what would it look like if there was more harmony in my relationships? It's a really fun thing to think about.
Yeah, it really is. And I like that the science, you know, backs it up.
Yeah.
Now, you talked about reality stuff. She's got some science with that too.
Okay.
She says that we have something called the putamen, and I have no idea if I'm saying that right. The putamen is part of our brain that helps keep track of specific actions and behaviors that typically lead to positive results for you. So it's the part of your brain that knows things like, I feel better when I get fresh air, or if I'm having a bad day, cooking helps me. The putamen is like a reality check on your future imagination. And since this putamen is trained on real experiences, the future actions it suggests will be heavily influenced by strategies that worked for you in the past, which is why another important part of imagination training is to try out new behaviors, says McGonagall, that could prove useful in the future. She calls these micro actions, taking no more than 5 minutes to do something today you've never done before. And she says when you experiment with micro actions, you expand what your putamen considers realistic behavior. So I feel like what she's saying there, Denise, is it's almost like priming your brain to receive and accept more of the more that you were mentioning at the start of the show.
Yes. Yes. And it also, I love the brain chemistry part of that. We both know that. But just the fact of this feels realistic, and those micro actions, because one of my not obsessive thoughts lately, but is we've talked about this before, is it a rut or is it a routine? And I think for many of us right now, in order to switch stuff out, we do have to make these little micro actions to step out of our comfort zone a bit. And the fact that this person is saying the same thing, that that's actually a reality check on your future imagination, that's hopeful.
Very, very hopeful. And for anyone who's fans of, say, Abraham Hicks or more spiritual metaphysical manifesting, she also says, as your brain works to transport you to the future, feelings will kick in. So the insula and amygdala, the emotion centers in the brain, fire up to give you a preview of how you will feel in the future. And we know that's such a crucial component of manifesting, is to focus on the feelings. And these emotions will give you important information and help you decide, is this a future I want to wake up in? Should I take actions today to make this future more or less likely?
Right.
And again, that's important. Let's say you're deciding, like I said before, to move across the country, to change careers, to go back to school, to say yes to a new relationship. I think it's important to really sit for quite some time and think about that, and think about what it will look like for you, for your friends, for your family, for your bank account, like you were saying before, Denise, for all of those different aspects of our life. And then always go back to your feelings. You know, how do I feel waking up in this imagined future?
Right. And that's that fine line again between, it's really exciting to think of moving, and I have moved across the country a lot of times, so I have a baseline with that. And it is, it's exciting, it's a new adventure, it's new, you know, travel, blah, blah, blah. But there's also getting someplace and knowing, I don't know a soul here. What if something happens? So you get the mix of excitement and maybe anxiety or caution, or you're really hopeful for a new beginning, but it's kind of scary. So I think there's a real duality with a lot of this that we're talking about today, that you want these changes, you want to get them in place, but there's going to be a balance that comes into play.
Totally. You know, since I've known you and since I've known myself, I've wanted to write, right? Isn't that something mm-hmm. you...
Yeah.
And I just always pictured it. And when I got the book out into the world, I had never pictured like going to book signings. I know that's stupid, but I really hadn't. And I hadn't pictured like standing in front of people and talking about it. That was so uncomfortable for me. I'm much better with it now, but I kind of wish I had thought about that stuff before, because it would have kind of trained my brain to not be anxious about those moments.
That's a really, really good point, because it comes back to the term I used a few minutes ago, is pre-teaching yourself to see what it can potentially become, rather than, oh, I've always done it this way, or I can't step out of my comfort zone. Or, you know, if someone had told me 10 years ago that I'd be doing a podcast, I would have laughed until I fell down, because I would have said, no, that's not going to happen. That's not even anywhere in my scope and sequence. But if I had thought about how can I put myself out there and be more comfortable talking to large groups of people, because we met at a platform mediumship and both of us were anxious about getting up in a room full of people. So the fact of, we did pre-teach ourselves, we did practice, what is this going to look like? So I think you're making some really, really important points today with this. We're only as limited as we allow ourselves to be.
And sometimes this pre-teaching our brain can be helpful, because, you know, getting up and talking about my writing, I'm comfortable with now. And I always knew eventually I would be, but doing that platform mediumship, I realized, that is so scary and so wonderful and just so not me. So I think it's important so you can understand kind of who you are. And what makes you feel comfortable and what you want to do and where you want to go. And she also says in this book that these are real feelings. And we talked about this on the show many times, but she says studies show that the emotions you experience during this future imagining can be just as psychologically powerful as emotions experienced in the present. This is one reason why many of us prefer to imagine best case scenario futures and avoid imagining the futures that scare us. But yeah, I mean, science has proven that when we feel these emotions, they trigger the same stuff in our brain that's triggered when we're experiencing those emotions in real time.
Okay, so this is kind of a twist on this. A lot of people will look at future things with, oh, I have to look at the worst case scenario so I know that I could figure it out. And I've never been a worst case scenario person. I don't want to put that out into the world. I'm aware of stuff that can happen, but how would do you think that would play into this when people always go to the, well, this and this could really happen? That's not what we're talking about here today, is it?
No, it's not. But I do think if you are a certain type of person, I think that can be very, very helpful. My dad used to do that with me all the time. I remember when I was in college and I was sure I was going to fail statistics. I did not, thank you to a very generous curve. But I remember like just crying about it and stressing and oh my gosh, I think I bought so many gifts for the TA. I was constantly getting help for that class. And my dad said to me, Samantha, what is the worst thing that could happen? And I was like, I'll fail this class. And I was, you know, when you get all worked up. And he was like, okay, you fail the class, then what? Well, then I've wasted all that money and all that time and I have to take it again. Okay, then you take it again, then what? And he would always make me walk through those anxious thoughts that way. And I found it very helpful. I don't
Right.
know. I do know people that have like, you know, higher anxiety than I do, and that doesn't help them. So I don't want to suggest that to everyone. But for me, the worst, what's the worst that can happen type of thinking has actually been very, very helpful for me.
Okay. See, so that's a real, and going back to, we talked about it in the last episode about high functioning anxiety and relying on busyness to avoid feeling anxious. And maybe that's part of this looking forward is what would my life look like if my anxiety, if I wasn't feeling restless, if I wasn't procrastinating, if I wasn't stuck in this perfectionist cycle?
Yeah, well, check this out. A study done in 2017 that was published in Psychological Science found that the average person spends 30 to 50% of their day, half their day, in this wandering mental time travel state. And most of this wandering mental time travel is spent focused on worries for the future.
Oh.
So think about that. Like if you're going to spend half your day daydreaming and worrying about the future, why not kind of harness those reins, you know, and take some control back and retrain your brain to think positive thoughts about the future?
Right. And not we're not being Pollyanna, and we're not being, if life is difficult right now, we're not saying, oh, don't worry, just click your heels and it's going to be great. Just visualize in 10 years how that's not at all
No.
what we're saying at, in any way, shape, or form, because but we are saying that it this doesn't have to be the way it stays.
Yeah, it's just a way of really, I know so many people, I call them rolling stones, where they just kind of roll through life and they don't really consciously think about where they're going, where they want to go, what they want their life to look like a year from now, never mind 10 years from now. Don't you see that a lot with a lot of people? They're just like, yeah, I'm just gonna do this job and see how it goes and
Yeah, just
hang
let it
out and
unfold, and they don't get worked up about it.
yeah.
And I kind of envy that a little bit because it is being in the moment. It's also, just let's see what happens.
I do and I don't envy that because I feel like then a lot of those people will come to us saying, I have to have a reading because I don't know how I ended up here.
That's a very good point. Yes. Where the hell do I go from here?
How did this happen? You know, and I think it's part of that not taking that time to go into the deep end of the ocean
Yeah.
and really think about, is this who I am? Is this what I want? Where do I want to be? And sometimes when you can't see, like my daughter's getting ready to graduate college and she's so excited and she already has a lovely, fantastic career job lined up, and I'm so proud of her. But she's so scared too. She's like, you know, what is this going to look like? Where am I? You know, I've got to go out there and help her find an apartment soon because her lease is ending. And She's got all these questions, like how are a lot of her friends are moving back home or taking jobs in other parts of the state. And so there's a lot of unknown, and there are those threshold moments where we know for certain everything's going to change. I mean, she knows when she walks across that stage, everything about her life is going to change. And sure, it's going to be for the better, but there's also some scary unopened things. Where am I going to live? Who am I going to live with? What's that going to look like? What's my boss going to be like? All of that. And I think sometimes what happens is people are like, that's too scary. I'm just not going to think about it. I'm just going to let it happen.
Right,
And
it
all I'm
can.
saying is, in my life, when I've done that, you can roll like that rolling stone into a pasture of manure, or you can roll into, a lucky leprechaun's treasure of gold. But until you give yourself permission to train your brain to prepare for a positive future, you're not going to know what's going to come. So I think it's important to take that time to really, really mentally time travel into the future you want to co-create.
And I spoke with someone recently who was in a profession. They're doing well, they're successful. And intuitively, I said, wow, I never, well, first of all, they shared with what they were doing. And I said, wow, I never ever would have said that. Your energy is so creative and your eye for color and detail. And it was just as overwhelming. And the person got really quiet and then said, oh, that's what I've always wanted to do. That's what I've always, that was my dream life, but I fell into this one and I'm good at it and I'm successful and I have resources. But there was a longing, there was a feeling of that's who I used to be. And I think sometimes if we've put that on the back burner, or we've taken the route that seems like the one we're supposed to take, or it's the best choice at the time, it doesn't mean we can't circle back around to something and revisit it later on.
Oh, for sure. Those second and third chapters hold such beautiful possibility.
Or fourth and fifth
Or
chapters.
fourth and fifth, sure. Six times the charm. I have a friend who's incredibly successful, but also all of her siblings are. And years ago, I asked her, like, what did your parents do? Like, this is amazing. And she said that every year, their parents would sit them all down and they would have to write out 5-year goals every year. So they'd have to shift that around. But as a family, they would all get together and each child would write down their five. And it started, I think she said, when they were in middle school.
Oh my goodness.
Now, my kids and I do vision boards and goal books, but I've never sat them down and said, like, Chloe, you're 12 years old. Where do you want to be when you are 17? I think I think it's a great idea, though.
I think for certain kids, it could be a great idea, and for some, it might be debilitating.
Yeah, and stressful, right. But for that family, it definitely worked. So I think whatever is comfortable for you, whether it's a goal book, a vision board, or writing down specific, goals for 1 year, 3 year, 5 years, 10 years, or doing this imaginal thinking as the futurist Jane McGonigal was talking about. I think it is important to kind of prime our brain to be on the lookout for these potentials that we want to create for ourselves.
And again, I'm not being trite by saying it's never too late. As long as you're still here, you have the choice and the option to make a change and to go after what you really want. There's, to me, it's debilitatingly sad when someone reaches the end of their life and they realize they didn't make or have the time to do what they really wanted to do, because of illness or circumstances or whatever it might be. And then they realize that they don't have that choice anymore. That's
Okay,
sad.
that is very sad. But let's circle back to our first word that we were talking about, post-traumatic growth. What if those people could use this mental time travel and look at some of the choices they might have had to have made that prevented them, right? And see the positive in that as well. Because there, like, I know a lot of people. I have an uncle, for example, who had to give up a career that he really, really wanted to take care of his family But at the end of his life, he had so much pride in that he was able to take care of his family and send all his kids to college because he had to make those choices. So I think there's, do you know what I'm
No,
saying?
I agree with you 100% because it's, I don't think anyone goes into raising children say, I'm going to end up being a single parent and have to work two jobs in order to take care of everyone. I don't think that's the initial goal. And it may happen in someone's life and they get through it and they look back and say, well, I wasn't able to, we'll use your example, I wasn't able to write the book or go to dance school or travel because my obligations and my responsibilities were in a different place. But I think when it comes down to something intrinsic in you that you want to experience or create or be a part of, it comes back to giving yourself that 10 minutes a day to really focus on whatever your little daydream might be.
Yes. And I think those things that we want to do, if we're meant to do them, it will always find a way.
Yeah, they come back.
They come back because it's part of our soul purpose and why we are here. So those are just my little buzzwords that I've seen pop up on my news feed. And I thought it'd be fun to dive in and do some research on them and share them with everyone. I hope you guys have enjoyed that. If you have some spiritual chatty buzzwords that are popping up on your news feed, send them to us because we like going down these rabbit holes from time to time.
It's fun. It's really fun. And it's nice that when you first brought up the thought of buzzwords, I thought, oh, I don't want to get into all the things that are going around social media and stuff. But this was interesting. This was really a fun thing to think about.
Well, good. I'm so glad. I hope you guys enjoyed it too. And please remember, as always, to show up, do great work, and share your light and imagine a beautiful, happy, healthy future for yourself.
Oh, take care.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.